Broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Viewpoints. On today's show, the province of Nova Scotia invests over $1 million in a Cape Breton biotech plant.
So in effect, this replaces an oil refinery.
Nova Scotia, that's where the Cat's Lobster Shack snatched the title of Best Lobster Roll for the third time.
It's a fresh batch of judges every time, so it's pretty unique that one restaurant's won three times, honestly.
A new store sets up a shop in Winnipeg to help support war-displaced Ukrainian artisans.
This shop is like a goal to help all vendors to make some extra money. So it's like important for us to do this.
The Cobourg Council rescinds its decision to declare December as Christian Heritage Month.
What that decision did was open the door for other religious proclamations and flag-raising requests.
In Ontario, the Elora House organizes its charity walk to raise funds and to support local victims of human trafficking.
I think the youngest I've personally been called about was 12 years old, but average age really is 14 to 24.
The Camino Wellbeing and Mental Health connects with people who need to talk about their mental health issues. And you can have a howling good time and a three-course dinner with wolves at the Halliburton Forest and Wildlife Reserve. One guy even sets up to propose. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello, thanks for being with us again this week. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour and in good company with our national correspondents. Human trafficking and sexual exploitation is often thought as an urban problem, but it's not always the case. A local safe house and support system for victims in Wellington County is proof the issue also exists in smaller locations. Taking care of victims of sexual exploitation is part of the mission that Elora House is taking on. It's also gearing up for its annual charity walk through the coldest night of the year event. Held on February 2nd, the charity walk is the organization's main fundraising event, and it essentially relies on community support. Louisa Cross is the executive director and founder of Elora House. She says the organization helped up to 75 victims in the region last year alone. Here's Riley Gillespie-Wilson in Ferguson, Ontario.
Elora House is entirely run by donors and community contribution, with no government support right now. Their founder and executive director, Louisa Kraus, says while higher numbers can be observed in urban centers, human trafficking is very much an issue within Wellington County as well.
Obviously, the numbers are lower than Toronto, for example, but we do have and have had residents from Fergus and Elora. We have worked with many from this area. Last year when I got numbers, I believe the number was around 50 to 75 different people in this area that were victims.
Elora House says they strive to allow victims of sex trafficking to rest, rebuild, and restart. Kraus explains human trafficking is something that affects a wide age range of individuals in the region.
I think the youngest I've personally been called about was 12 years old, but I heard of something recently in the neighboring area that was like a 7-year-old. But average age really is 14 to 24 for young women. We have had women as old as 50 in our care.
This year's Coldest Night of the Year event is focused on Stage 3 for women who are victims of sex trafficking, restarting. This means allowing them a smooth transition back into independence. The night is a big fundraising event for Elora House, having raised $100,000 last year. Kraus says these types of events are crucial to Elora House's operations.
Without the money, we would not be able to actually have Elora House. And we don't currently have any support from the government. So everything we get is from our supporters and donors and stuff like that. So that's the biggest way, is money and volunteering.
The walk strives to reach last year's mark of $100,000 and will take place on February 22nd in Elora. This is Riley Gillespie Wilson reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative.
Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
This time of year can be difficult for many people, and reaching out for help in a mental health crisis can, for many, be really challenging. So the Camino Wellbeing and Mental Health, a nonprofit organization based in Kitchener-Waterloo, offers an online presence, reaching out to those in need through their website. Tracy Elop, the CEO of Camino House, says there are many ways people struggle with mental health. Cora Kuhl in Kitchener-Waterloo met with her.
Depression and anxiety are really prevalent across the community. This time of year, we have people also who are really affected by a seasonal disorder, and I think that comes to light a lot in the cold weather and people not getting outside enough, maybe not enough exercise, but also just that feeling of hopelessness and despair that sometimes come with the winter time.
Elop says the community is still facing effects of the pandemic.
Canadians report having poor or fair mental health three times more often now than they did before the pandemic. So that would be sort of 26% in 2021 compared to 9% in 2019. So those are huge increases and just kind of reaffirm the extent of the challenges.
The Center for Addiction and Mental Health says that the stigma around mental health prevents 40% of people with anxiety or depression from reaching out. Elop says she hopes Camino makes it easier to reach out.
I hate the idea that the stigma around mental health continues to exist. And, you know, if I would say one thing to anyone who's listening, there is absolutely no harm in reaching out. And organizations like Camino Wellbeing and Mental Health, I hope make it easier for people to reach out.
For individuals who are struggling with mental health and who may not be ready to reach out, Elop shares some suggestions.
If they're feeling anxious or depressed, friends are there for a reason. And so, you know, there's no harm in talking to a friend. I think people maybe underestimate the value of exercise, the value of getting enough sleep, the value of being outside on days that we could actually see the sun. So all of those things contribute. Eating well contributes to your overall mental health and well-being. But there are times when, people need a little bit more.
If cost is a factor, Elop says there are many programs out there to assist.
Almost 60% of young people who have signs of a mental illness are not getting help because of the cost. And the reality of it is that even if you don't have benefits through work, even if you don't have the financial means to pay, the support for you is still available through organizations like Camino.
Camino Wellbeing and Mental Health is a nonprofit organization that is there to help members of the community who are in need of support. In Kitchener, with the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Cora Kuhl.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
Next, from Ontario to Manitoba, to tell you about the Colo Shop. It's a cozy new gift shop in Winnipeg's East Kildonan area, a shop which was set up to create financial opportunities for Ukrainian artists and crafters. The idea began when an online group of war-displaced Ukrainians started selling their art and handmade products online. The Colo Shop owner, Seri Okrimenko, says his wife, Yulia, came to Canada with their son and started making handmade items and selling them at different markets. They later connected with other Ukrainians in the area who wanted to do the same. Ryan Funk in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
This is what happened with my wife. She came to here without me, with my son. And at start, It was hard time, like need to find a job, need to find all process of documents and Cetera flow. So she can make some handmade stuff and try to resell through the markets.
According to Winnipeg's 2021 census data, 90,380 city residents reported Ukrainian heritage. By February 2024, 2 years after the war began in Ukraine, nearly 29,000 Ukrainians had arrived at Manitoba's reception center at Winnipeg Airport, and more than 23,600 provincial health cards had been issued. Serhii and his wife, Julia, had once dreamed of opening a flower shop in Ukraine. When war erupted, Julia and their young son fled to Canada. Now reunited, Serhii says he sees Colo Shop as a fresh start for that dream and a way to give back. Julia now volunteers at the shop. She walks through the space, which is filled with embroidered shirts, handmade jewelry, traditional Ukrainian dolls, and home decor created by the shop's 15 vendors. Stopping by ornaments along a wall, she shares a story about one of the vendors.
This works from Marina Zadavi. She makes some ornaments and painted by herself. So she also came from Ukraine when Zeva started with her little son. And for her, like when she decided to come and sell their products, it was a big opportunity for her because we know she is with her son and she need to earn some money. Like it's at this shop, it's like a goal to help all vendors to make some extra money. So it's like important for us to do this.
Victoria Maslavska, another vendor, arrived in Canada with her two children. She says the opening of Colo Shop has been a game changer for her small business.
For me, this store is another amazing place where I can sell my beeswax skin creams and lip balms without needing to be there in person. It helps me reach more people, gives my products recognition, and really supports my small business.
Serhii says Winnipeg's Ukrainian community has been incredibly supportive and excited to visit the shop. He hopes that even those without Ukrainian heritage will stop by, connect with the vendors, and to learn more about them and Ukrainian culture. I'm Ryan Funk.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're tuned to Viewpoints.
The province of Nova Scotia has invested more than $1 million into agri-food innovation in Cape Breton. The investment was made to Diverse Assurance Center, an independent clean technology development and deployment facility, for their biomanufacturing fermentation plant in Edwardsville. Biomanufacturing is the process of using living systems, such as plant and animal cells, to produce commercial materials. The goal of the plant is to replace petrochemicals and the production of materials such as nylon, therapeutics, and dyes and more. More with the Jacob Postlewaite and Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
The province has made a $1 million investment into a biomanufacturing plant in Cape Breton that has the potential to replace an oil refinery. The investment was made to the Verschuren Center, an independent clean technology development and deployment facility, for their biomanufacturing fermentation plant in Edwardsville. Biomanufacturing is the process of using living systems such as plant and animal cells to produce commercial materials. Material using biodegradable elements is created in a lab and then replicated or grown in the plant's fermentation tanks before it's shipped off to a client. Beth Mason is the executive chair of the Verschuren Center and discuss some of the products the plant produces.
So it could be things like bioplastic molecules for making food films. It could be a functional health ingredient, such as a prebiotic. It could be a therapeutic for health of animals. It could be a green chemical, like a solvent or an adhesive or a dispersant, or it could be a dye.
Mason says everything in our lives is produced from petrochemical fossil fuels, and the plant will work to replace them.
If you took everything that's around us, it would disappear if petrochemicals disappeared. So nylons, we can do that by bacteria, making a bio-nylon. So the goal is that as petrochemicals are displaced, we're going to replace them with bio-based production like this. So in effect, this replaces an oil refinery.
The plant will be able to grow materials from 10 to 10,000 liters in their fermentation tanks. The plant is still under construction and is expected to begin production in the spring. The investment by the province was announced at the plant by Glace Bay Dominion MLA John White, who says the investment is helping put Cape Breton first.
The investment will position Cape Breton and Nova Scotia for growth in Canadian biomanufacturing sector. It will enable new products and services that were previously not possible in this province.
The province has previously contributed $2.5 million towards the plant. The new investment will allow the Verisuran Center to increase their number of clients from 40 to 50 and create more opportunities for training and employment. The plant currently employs around a dozen people. White was joined by Verisuran Center CEO Dr. Baolin Chen, who echoed his sentiments and said the plant will help make Nova Scotia a national player.
So the support of our partners in the province on such a game-changing asset means we can help small and medium-sized enterprises from across the country achieve a path to the market, bring jobs and investment to Nova Scotia. And this plant allows companies to stay in Canada rather than leave for Europe and South America, where the only other similar scales exist.
The total cost of the facility is $13 million and is the largest of its kind in Canada. Verisuran Center currently works out of a lab at Cape Breton University using a single bioreactor. While the plant will vastly expand Verisuran Center's operation, Chen says it will also help address net zero goals. I'm Jacob Postlewaite.
You're tuned to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
So 2 weeks ago, we told you that the Cobourg Council is rethinking its position on issuing religious declarations, this after being asked to designate a day in March as Atheist Awareness Day. Well, Council has rethought its position, and Christian Heritage Month is no more as of January 31st. At its latest meeting, the Cobourg Council went back on its decision and voted to rescind the Christian Heritage Month declaration. Dan Jones reports.
Cobourg Council has rescinded a proclamation which declared December as Christian Heritage Month. The abrupt reversal comes after citizen Bob Ledrew in mid-January told a corporate finance and legislative standing committee meeting that he was denied a request from municipal staff to declare March 23rd as Atheism Awareness Day. Ledrew was back in front of council Wednesday night, saying the town is applying its religious declarations policy unfairly. He says his request was denied as the town's flag-raising and proclamation policy does not allow for declarations to be issued for religious organizations or events.
I think that that decision has the potential to have some negative impacts on the town, and I wanted to highlight the fact that in effect, what that decision did was open the door for other religious proclamations and flag-raising requests that are now going to feel that they have a right. If one has the right, then we all have the right.
Councillor Randy Barber, who initially voted in favor of the proclamation, focused on the heritage portion of the declaration, suggesting that Cobourg was founded on Christianity.
The town then saying that a Christian heritage awareness then would mean that what the base roots of Cobourg were at that particular time, and that's what it's celebrating.
Ledrew countered, saying that Northumberland County is becoming less religious. He said at a 2021 Statistics Canada Religious Diversity Report, suggesting that approximately 45% of the county's population has no religious affiliation, up from 25% 10 years ago. He also warned that if you allow one religious-based proclamation, then council should be declaring all religions.
I think that decision is incorrect in light of the fact that there was a Christian Heritage Month. I think you could further argue that there's no atheist church, there's no pope of atheism, there's no imam of atheism. And you could argue that atheism is the inverse of a religious organization and that Atheism Awareness Day is the opposite of a religious event.
A motion put forward by Deputy Mayor Nicole Beattie and amended by Mayor Lucas Cleveland rescinded the five-year proclamation declaring December as Christian Heritage Month. As well, municipal staff suggested a policy change requiring citizens requesting a proclamation to do so 3 months in advance of their declaration to allow council and staff to adequately review whether that request meets established policy. Staff are expected to return to council at a later date with recommendations. I'm Dan Jones.
Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints.
So tell us, are you hungry? You might be after our two next stories. It seems that simplicity and consistency are key to the success of Captain Cat's Lobster Shack. The eatery secured its third consecutive victory in the category of Best Lobster Roll. Captain Cat's Lobster Shack restaurant in Barrington Passage, Nova Scotia, near the self-proclaimed lobster capital of Canada, took home top honors last Sunday in the annual lobster roll-off as part of the Nova Scotia Lobster Crawl. Captain Cat's kitchen manager Wendell McKay explained that the secret to their success is letting the lobster shine. Pencils ready, all the ingredients and culinary secrets were revealed to Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
We have a winner of number one is Captain's Cat's.
Keeping it simple paid off big for Captain Cat's Lobster Shack on Sunday as it grabbed the title of Best Lobster Roll on the South Shore. It's the third time the Barrington Passage restaurant has topped the competition in the annual lobster roll-off as part of the Nova Scotia Lobster Crawl. They won the first roll-off in 2018. Wendell McKay is the kitchen manager at Captain Cat's. He says it's the same recipe every year.
Feels good to be back in the winner's seat for sure. We've won a few years in the past, but it's been a couple years since we've won. And we like to focus on the lobster and not adding too many bells and whistles. And sometimes the lobster gets left in the back of the palate that way. So we put fresh lobster meat, green onion, celery, mayo, and just a little bit of spinach between the bun and the lobster to kind of keep the moisture from penetrating the bread too much. We just use regular butter on the butter of the bun, no garlic or anything.
Victoria Hopkins made the winning lobster roll.
And I am the cold roll mama, and I'm the one that makes the cold roll with lots of love.
11 restaurants from around the South Shore competed in the blind tasting on Sunday afternoon. They ranged from the traditional, like Captain Cat's, to the elaborate. Some rolls featured Nova Scotia smoked salmon and pepperoni, or deep-fried lobster macaroni and cheese, in addition to lobster meat. Four travel writers from outside Nova Scotia served as judges. Stephanie Miller-Vincent is the coordinator of the South Shore Tourism Cooperative, which organizes the Lobster Crawl. She said they bring in a new group of judges every year, and none of them eats a lobster roll at any of the competing restaurants before the big day.
It's a fresh batch of judges every time, so it's pretty unique that one restaurant's won three times, honestly.
Second place went to the Quarterdeck Resort, which hosted the event this year, and Osprey's Nest Public House and Petite Revere finished in third. Lobster lovers can vote for their favorite lobster roll for the whole month of February. Details, including the 11 participating restaurants, are on the Nova Scotia Lobster Crawl website. I'm Rick Conrad.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
And we close this edition of Viewpoints at the Haliburton Forest. That's where a wolf sanctuary partnered up with a local restaurant to offer a candlelight dinner with wolves. The Wolf Sanctuary dinner experience features a three-course meal, and the guests have the whole center to themselves to view the wolves playing, even eating their own dinner sometimes. They can also tour the museum undisturbed by crowds. The idea came out of an unusual request by a guy who wanted to propose. It's become so popular that the Dinner with Wolves program is now by far the center's biggest and best-selling attraction. More on this with Elizabeth Oakley.
It's an iconic sound, the sound of the wild, the sound of wolves. And at the Halliburton Forest and Wildlife Reserve's Wolf Sanctuary, you can now enjoy a catered three-course meal while taking in the sights and sounds of the five gray wolves who live there through the Dinner with Wolves experience. Marina Wigmore, the sanctuary's Wolf Center and Experience Manager, explains how an overseas inquiry about hosting a surprise wedding proposal there turned into the Dinner with Wolves program.
So at one point, I had gotten an email from a gentleman from the UK, was coming to visit some cousins in Canada with his girlfriend, and was wanting to propose. So he was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I think this would be a really cool place to do it. Please help. And I was like, sweet, I'm on it. At that point, I think just like a few months before that, I had had my own wedding. So I was fully on board. I was like, let's do this. Let's do this proposal for you. So we put together, you know, let's do an intimate dinner here. And we kind of did a surprise. There was like a public event beforehand. So I said, okay, like come for the public event. And then when everybody's leaving, say you just have to come inside to go use the bathroom or something like that. And just come back in for a few minutes and then say, oh, let's just peek at the wolves one more time. Let's go back up to the observation. And we had the whole dinner set up, fairy lights, the whole everything. And of course she said yes. And so then they had a lovely kind of candlelit dinner while the wolves were hanging out outside the windows. And, you know, seeing how special that was for them, we were like, okay, this is a cool thing that other people would enjoy.
Catered by nearby Bosch Kung Smokehouse, the dinners have been wildly popular since they began just over a year ago. Marina says the allure of seeing wolves never gets old, and the mystery surrounding them is what attracts both visitors and diners alike.
Typically, the wolves are hanging out right outside the window. Sometimes they're eating too. Sometimes they're playing. Sometimes they're just napping. Sometimes they're a little less present, but it's such an intimate way to experience the wolves in the Wolf Center. They have the whole museum to themselves. It's completely private. You know, I've had people in tears at the end of it because it was just that special for them. They just connect to wolves in such a different way. And it's been really beautiful and a really well-loved program.
The dinners take place Monday to Friday at the center. In the winter, seatings are at 3 p.m. because of the limited daylight hours. Marina says the feedback has been positive given the uniqueness of the experience.
People are looking for transformative experiences. They want to be changed. And people do leave feeling like this was so cool. They want to send pictures to all their friends. They're telling everybody. And I've had a number of ones where it is like, hey, you know, my sister came and now I'm coming or whatever, things like that. And, you know, word of mouth has, in the history of Halliburton Forest, always been the best marketing.
Thanks to Elizabeth Oakley. And this is how we close our show this week, thanks to our many journalists, Rick Conrad, Dan Jones, Elizabeth Oakley, Ryan Gillespie Wilson, Cora Kuhl, Ryan Funk, and Jacob Postlewaite. Thanks to our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Boris Chassagne, your host and producer. Thanks for keeping us company this week, and until the next, ciao.